Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
That's like capitalism and like our culture of like accumulation. And like I'm realizing more and more that like there's only one option on the menu of what an art career can look like. And there's like only one option of what artists look like that were successful, you know, and they're usually white and they're usually male. It's like, I mean, as I get older, I'm like rejecting that more and more. It's like, I can like make my own menu, you know, and it's not even making my own menu, but there have been other ones around for forever. But it's just that, at least I like internalized that, you know, it's like, you got to make a ton of work. You got to sacrifice everything else. And this kind of speaks to that, like, sort of sexist idea that like this great man, he does everything, but you know, behind the scenes, it's like, there's usually the wife that's taking care of the house, taking care of kids and all that sort of invisible labor.
Welcome to this special and unique episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. I'm breaking the rules a bit today, and I'm going to be sharing in conversation with some guests who may surprise you. In the 3 years of running this podcast, the only dad who has joined me so far has been my husband, John, in an episode where we recorded and we talked about building my home studio. And while I don't actually think it's my job to create a platform for dads in the art world, I do think this is a season of me expanding the narrative and shaking things up a bit. So in honor of Father's Day here in the US, I have invited three of my good friends who are artist dads, and they are going to share a bit about their life, their work, and their perspective. So welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, Matt Plett, Theo Smith, and Alex Peck. I am so glad the three of you are here and that you were willing to join in conversation on the Artist Mother Podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Okay, so let's go around and I will kind of cue you guys and have you just share a little bit about who you are. Tell us where you live and how old your kids are, maybe a little something about your partner or spouse, and a little bit about your art. Alex, can we start with you?
Sure. Thanks for having me. My name is Alex Peck. I live in Los Angeles right now. We moved here during the pandemic from New York about 2 years ago. I have two kids. I have a 9-year-old girl and a 2-year-old girl. The 2-year-old was born in late March of 2020 in New York City, if you can remember.
Oh, my gosh. Like.
Whoa.
When you thought world was ending.
Yeah. So that was intense. That could be a whole podcast in itself.
Yes.
My wife is a physician. So she makes the money for the household. And because of that, I'm a stay-at-home dad. And I have been since Fiona was like, you know, a couple months old. Now I'm an artist. I make like kind of these modular paper-based installations. And I also run Tiger Strikes Asteroid, which is a nonprofit network of artist-run spaces. And we have 5 locations in the U.S.
So, awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. Theo, what about you? Can you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Sure. My name is Theopolis Smith III. Go by Fresh Laundry. Multidisciplinary artist. Everything from oils, acrylics, aerosols, airbrushing, strong suits, portraits, all that good stuff. I am a father of two. I have now an 18-year-old son who just turned 18, and I have a soon to be seven-year-old daughter. Keeps me on my toes. I'm married, been married going on 8 years. And my wife, she is the yin to my yang. She is a organizational leadership major, and now she's going for her master's to be a mental health therapist. While works in the Parkview field here, as far as helping make sure people that are residents are season and make sure they're up to par to work in the field. And for me, I paint full time now, thankfully. My background is in marketing and finance, but I have the privilege to be able to wake up every day and literally create. And so that's my playground. So when I'm not doing that, I guess I'm a stay-at-home dad now, too, if that makes sense. I love cooking. I love chilling with my family. I love being with my wife as well, too. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Theo. Last but not least, Matt, let's hear who you are.
My name is Matt Plett. I live in Fort Wayne as well. And I have two kids. They're 12 and 10. Elliot is 12. We got middle school, and Remy is 10. My wife is a third grade public school teacher. And as Alex kind of said, she's the one that makes the money and lets me be an artist in a way. He didn't say that. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but that's how it works. That's how it works at our house. I've been the stay-at-home dad until the kids were like full-time school. So it's been a while, and I'm a designer / artist, muralist, letterer, hustler, I guess, a little bit. Whatever I can get my hands on, I like it all. So,
and it's so fun to live in a city where I knew both of your work before I even knew you, because Alex, Matt, and Theo both have done amazing murals like right in my neighborhood, and their kind of fingerprints and their art are like all over the city. So it's pretty cool. Okay, so let's start back with Alex and have you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist. I'm wondering if there's any threads that feel like a through line for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, I know like my first entry into thinking about any sort of art seriously was through Western classical music, because I played a lot of instruments when I was a kid and I was in orchestras and stuff. So I think that is a big childhood influence. And then I was actually accepted into college as a computer science major. So I did a lot of computer programming and stuff when I was a little kid, or I guess a high school kid. But then I switched to art my senior year in high school. But I think there's like a, you know, the more I think about it, there's like a common link there and being interested in kind of building larger, more complex things out of smaller, simple units. So like building a symphony out of like a Western 12-tone scale, or like building a, you know, complex program out of like small bits of code. And my work is kind of like that. And like,
yeah, totally.
The way I run TSA is kind of like that. It feels like there's like this sort of larger connection with the way that my brain is attracted to things or something.
Yeah, the parts kind of moving and becoming a whole, but then also breaking apart and becoming different things, definitely in your artistic language. So interesting to hear how that has been part of your background. Theo, what about you? Can you share something about your childhood that you feel like connects to your life as an artist today?
Yeah, so I'm an 80s baby. That's for starters. And being my father, he uprooted us and we traveled as kids, because he was, I thought he was Al Bundy, but he was a shoe salesman for Payless. And we would travel, and I would live in bigger cities. I lived in like Chicago, lived in Detroit. We're from St. Louis originally, but by way of Philadelphia, and just seeing these different walks of life of people. And of course, graffiti was at like the height of its time for that era right now, especially in Philadelphia. You had some like debris and old, you know, buildings that were not up to par, and you would see people like do graffiti. Of course, I'm a fan of movies as well too. So you got like this movie like Beat Street, which resonates with me with the graffiti culture. But being multidisciplinary, I'm like I said, all walks of life. I had to see art in many aspects, from that arena to going into art museums with my mom, you know, when my dad was working hard. And then also too, just in our household, my family are creators as well too. So my dad would come in, he would be in the suit and he would draw with me. Mm-hmm. He would make great pictures. And then my mom, she's a seamstress, but also can draw as well too. So just having that influence in the household and just being able to kind of like, hey, you could create and be free in that writer in the house. So that's what I hold in on. Then in my teenage years, like I said, I'm dating myself, but movies again, this movie called Cool World don't know if you remember that, but just seeing this.
These guys do. I don't, this, but.
Yeah. So going through the phase of seeing like this dude, like animate, and I'm looking, I'm sitting here with my pencil and paper in hand, watching movies all day and sketching to see what I can mimic, but then also to create my own characters as well, too, to see what I could come up with it. And I'm just make a statement. I didn't know what I was doing with it. I didn't know how influential it would be. I just know it was a need to, I resonated with it and it was an echo and I would create as well too. And who would ever thought I would be doing this full time. So.
That's awesome.
Also, I'm old.
I love that idea though of you just kind of not making art with an agenda, but just using it to process like what is visually interesting to you basically, you know, is like what you were doing as a kid or teenager. So that's really cool. Matt, what about you? What do you feel like still connects, you know, to your life as an artist today that maybe was an influence in your childhood?
Yeah, I grew up moving a lot. Like Theo said, I didn't live in any big places, like Denver a little bit, but like I grew up in Kansas and Indiana. So if you haven't been to those places, you have a stereotype and it's mostly true. But I remember as like very young, like preschool, show with Mark Kistler. Do you guys remember who Mark Kistler was? He's like a PBS drawing show. Theo, remember? I remember watching that every single day and with a friend as well, which is kind of maybe I've kind of put two and two together. And I think that's why I like collaboration so much, maybe, is because I've always had a very social relationship with art and creativity. And we moved a lot. My dad is a basketball coach and has been since I was born, which also is why we moved a lot. He kept losing. So that part of me is very, it sounds like a very opposite sports, art, creativity, but they've always both been very much in my mind. Obviously, sports dies off when your body just can't even think about those things. And but all those kind of things really have influenced me. And now I feel like it's come full circle. I feel like my children have influenced so much of me even wanting to create. Mm-hmm. Showing them and connecting that has been a big deal for me.
Awesome. We'll start back with you, Matt. I'm interested to know just a little bit more about your path into being an artist. Like, did you go to art school or kind of how did you carve out time in your life to develop your artistic career and, you know, to kind of bring it to the place where it is now?
Yeah. So I went to school. I went to college for graphic design. And so that's my main default expertise, I would say. I think that was never enough for me in a way. I'm not demeaning any design work or anything like that, but I still do it all the time. But the combo of the creativity that like fine art, I went to school for fine art, chickened out, thought I wasn't good enough. Went to change the graphic design. And now I want to do fine art. So it's a funny thing. When I worked at an ad agency for a while after college, hated that, but also it was what you got to do sometimes when you're a graphic designer. So then my wife and I decided to try to go more freelance gradually. Then I lost my job, just cutbacks and everything. Like the day after we got our house lease or our mortgage signed, it's worked out fine. It's worked out great. But gradually thrown into that has pushed me to, I think that's why I became the stay-at-home dad option, if you know what I mean. It wasn't like the plan ever. But I love, that's the most fulfilling thing I've ever done in my life. That and art are probably the two most fulfilling things. And so the three to five years when your kids are young, where you can't really work full-time and take care of kids, it's just impossible. You know, naps, you got naps and then you have nights and then, you know, you're not going to sleep anyway. So might as well like work every night. So that's what actually got me more and more and more into like, what do I want to do? What kind of things do I want to be good at? And once these kids are old enough and I can get into that. So that's mostly why I'm an artist now. And now my kids are in school, and except summers are weird for us, but Amanda's home because she's a teacher. Mm-hmm. So we are very like fluid. I don't try not to commit to too much work and stuff like that. So that's our schedule right now.
Awesome. I mean, that narrative is definitely familiar with the listeners of this podcast, kind of that intersection of I'm becoming a parent and my life is changing and our family structure has to change to accommodate that. And it a lot of times that opens things up for people to pursue like a passion that maybe they weren't able to pursue because of a full-time job or because of, you know, like that intersection often becomes, you know, an opportunity, I guess. So it's just interesting, like the narrative that you just shared. I know so many artist moms also have that experience of like, you know, I now have like these little bits and pieces of time. I don't have 8 hours, but like maybe I could start to do this other thing with that, that I'm really interested in. So thanks for sharing that. Theo, what about you? Like just interested to know how you've kind of developed, you know, your career, how you were making time for art before when you were working full time, and you know, did you go to art school? Like just talk a little bit about your art career trajectory.
So pretty much for me, start off with my career, it's like I was, you know, I didn't go to school for art. So it was one of those things where it's just like a constant like habit and hone in on like, a voice of mine and a style. I was the teenage prodigy of an airbrush artist. I was the person that did like all the t-shirts and airbrushed cars and motorcycles and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of fun. And I was kind of like the popular kid and people knew me for that in school. And then afterwards in college, there was no option. There was no art there program. So I was like, okay, marketing goes hand in hand. I could do something with something. So I ended up doing that, but would still do art, had like little rhythms of doing it here or there. And I kept finding myself through my art that way. Then fast forwarding, I will find myself, you know, I got a family now. I'm a mm-hmm. family man. And how can I fit art into this new world of being a person who I come into a relationship with my wife, and I'm an instant dad. So we don't use stepfather around here, but I'm a father to a new kid who's 8 years old and he's my best friend now. And then 6 months later, come in and have a daughter. So trying to navigate that, I will literally, you know, stay up all nights, the whole nine, go to work, take all my equipment with me, and I would paint on my lunches. Mm. And sometimes they have a burger in one hand or forget to eat at all. And I would and I would go back to work, and then I would get my family home. I would cook dinner for them, get them settled. And I say, hey, honey, I'm going to stay up all night. I'm going to paint again and do this over and over and over. Mm-hmm. That became my lifestyle, thinking like there would be no way. I don't know what this looks like for me any further. As a banker, they said, hey, we appreciate what you've done with us. Have a good life. Here's your slip. We're letting you and 52 other bankers go. I was like, okay. So I found my rhythm with art. So I think I can do this. And I told my wife, hey.
That was during COVID, right, Theo?
That was the week before. So I was like, okay, God, game on. I see what you're doing here. But this is all I know is how to do art and do it well. Mm-hmm. And I would just, I picked up like, it was the most peaceful transition I've ever had. Mm. Even with talking with my wife, say, hey, honey, this is what's going on. She said, hey, you got to do what you got to do. Go handle business. And I felt almost like free for the first time in my life to be able to create fully. And then ever since then, it's been kind of like, what else can I get into? And so even now, this is now year three of being able to do this full time. And I'm still finding new rhythms and who I am with it. But that's been my transition and up to.
Love to hear just how much passion you had to have all of that on your plate and continue to pursue art, and then how it just changed in like an instant. And you suddenly had, you know, this new opportunity to make a decision about what you want to pursue. It's really interesting. I'm so pleased to share that this episode of the Artist Mother podcast is sponsored by Annie's Kit Clubs. Annie's Kit Clubs brings craft and art supplies right to your doorstep. From woodworking to beading, knitting to card making, crochet, quilting, and more, you can join a kit club, and ready-to-go craft kits are mailed straight to your home on a regular basis. No prep work required. Such a fun and easy way to learn a new technique or gain inspiration by folks at Annie's who make it easy for you to try your hand at a new medium. Annie's Kit Clubs come packaged with materials and instructions for each project, so once it hits your doorstep, you can jump right in. I love this. Use promo code ARTISTMOTHER75 to take 75% off your first month of a kit subscription. Find out more at annieskitclubs.com. These kits would be a super fun way to get your kiddos involved in art and crafting without the burden of them going through all of your studio materials or making a mess with your stuff. Try out the Simply Beads kit to learn the art of jewelry making, knit your own socks with the Love to Knit kit, learn the art of crochet and create unique Afghan squares with the Afghan Block of the Month Club or their Moroccan Tile Crochet Club. That sounds very fancy. There's even a Young Woodworkers Kit Club, which would be so fun for kids, and a Charm Pack Club, which brings you 42-piece charm packs from America's top fabric designers. So once again, to get inspiration and supplies straight to your door, check out Annie's Kit Clubs and use promo code ARTISTMOTHER75 to take 75%, thank you Annie's, off your first month of a kit subscription. Find out more at annieskitclubs.com. That's ANNIESKITCLUBS.com. Thank you so much, Annie's Kit Clubs, for supporting and sponsoring the Artist Mother podcast. Alex, what about you? Can you talk a little bit about how you've kind of built your art career up over time and, you know, your experience with school, if you've had other jobs kind of intersecting with being an artist?
Yeah, I like I said, I switched majors when I got into college to do art, and then I went straight through from college to grad school. So I was young as a person and also pretty young as an artist, you know, because I had drawn and stuff when I was a kid, but I hadn't really taken it that seriously because I was more interested in other things before that. And then I just like made work for a while. I had odd jobs. Like I worked with children with autism, which was really great. I played poker for a living for a while, which was okay. But you know, it's like they paid the bills, so that was good.
Wow.
And then I started TSA like in 2009. So that's always been a constant, like, kind of other job or something else that requires my attention. So I just kept making stuff, trying to think like how to shorten this narrative. Once I had my first daughter, I was teaching at the time, and we kind of sat down and did the numbers, and it was like, well, we could put Fiona in daycare full time, and then I'll make $5,000 a year after daycare, you know. Like, this is really stupid. Like, I'm just going to stay home. And it was really hard, especially at the beginning, because I didn't, you know, it was really isolating, and I didn't know how to, I think I was still holding on to this one idea of success or an art career, which is like, you got to make the most work possible, and you got to hustle and do all this sort of stuff. And so like, I was just like frantically trying to like work whenever I could. But I don't think that's really sustainable, you know? And I feel like now I've come to sort of realize that it's better to think about life in like terms of like seasons, you know, like there's like busy seasons for different things. So like the past 2.5 years have been an intense season for being a family person, right? Like, it's like, I need to be there for my family. We just moved. COVID is happening. We have to protect our children, you know? And like, You know, like I have like a little baby that's like, you know, I have to keep her alive, you know, as much as she tries to resist that. And, you know, sometimes there's like busy seasons for TSA. So what I'm saying is like, you know, since it's been a busy season for my family, then that means that, you know, I'm still making art, but I just have to understand that, okay, right now is a temporary time where I won't be able to make as much, and that's fine. Right. And then there's other times, like if I'll have like a bunch of shows or something, it's like, okay, that'll be a busy season for art. And I know that I'm kind of not going to be the greatest or the most present father for a little bit of period of time, but it's temporary because that's what I have to do. Right. Or sometimes there's a busy season for like granting stuff and things for TSA and running the nonprofit. And that means I have to kind of focus on that. You know, I can't do like, I feel like it's like a losing battle to try to balance things. You know, it's like I'm going to spend 33.33% of my time, you know, with my family, 33% TSA, 33% art. Like it doesn't kind of work out like that. So I don't know. I guess like the way that I've maintained it is just like through that, you know. And then it's like, I mean, we all had small kids once. It's like, we're not going to be like 80 years old, you know, if we make it that far and be like, oh man, I wish I made like three more paintings. You know, it's like, no, like I was there, like when both my daughters said their first words, took their first steps, I was there for everything. Like I'm not, that's like worth more than making like a couple more paintings, you know?
That's awesome. I feel like a little bit about what you were speaking to before is just some of the cliche, like insecurities that artists have where we feel like we have to be making art all the time. We feel like we have to, you know, have a pile of work like ready to go. We have to, like, there's just so much pressure to produce. And, you know, I think coupling that with being somebody who wants a family and just literally doesn't have time to live the lifestyle of an artist, or the traditional lifestyle of an artist. Like, I would love to hear any or all of you just talk a little bit about like what it's like to be a male artist who's a stay-at-home dad and kind of pursuing, you know, a career as an artist, but also like you're doing it in a way that, you know, I think society would maybe look at you and say, like that's a little bit of a backdoor approach. I'm just wondering if you ever feel some of that pressure and like how you kind of handle that. Any of you want to speak to that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think like, it's like, you know, that's like capitalism and like our culture of like accumulation, you know, and and like, I'm realizing more and more that like, I was only offered, there's only one option on the menu of what an art career could look like. And there's like only one option of what artists look like that were successful, you know, and they're usually white and they're usually male. So it's like, I mean, as I get older, I'm like rejecting that more and more. It's like, I can like make my own menu, you know, and it's not even making my own menu, but there have been other ones around for forever, but it's just that, at least I like internalized that, you know, it's like, you got to make a ton of work. You got to sacrifice everything else. And this kind of speaks to that, like, sort of sexist idea that like, you know, a man, like he's like this great man, he does everything, but you know, behind the scenes, it's like, there's usually the wife that's taking care of the house, taking care of the kids and all that sort of invisible labor that comes with it. But yeah, so I mean, I think it's that, and you know, I mean, the stay-at-home dad thing, that's like, I mean, it's been really great, but it's definitely like isolating, you know, like you're talking about like infiltrating like mother groups. I mean, that's been my whole fatherhood experience, you know, like I definitely felt like isolated at like playgrounds and like at like mommy and me groups, you know, where it's like, I'm literally the only guy there, you know? So that's always been a little awkward to navigate.
Well, I want to come back to that because I have a follow-up question for that, but want the chance for Matt and Theo to respond to my initial question just about like, you know, pushing up against some of those stereotypes of what it means to be an artist and how being an artist dad may not always fit into that mold. Theo?
I think it plays with Western culture, society, as far as like how, you know, it's always this tradition, you know, the woman's supposed to do this role and man's supposed to do this role. And thankfully that the culture is shifting and we're like seeing it in real time right now, where I think the pandemic really shook everybody up of, hey, long as you're getting in there and being supportive in some kind of way. I think even now, I didn't second guess it. I just knew that in this household, it's a statement. We walk in our gifts. Mm. So like I said, when I first started, like, cooking is my thing. I cook the dinners at home. Mm. If there's something I could do with my children, or vice versa, my wife can do it. Teamwork makes the dream work. And like it's been one of those things where, you know, like I said, society is like, okay, you're supposed to do this role. And if you're not doing this role, you're weak. Or you classified meaning that you're nothing of not of value, or you're not strong. You're not this man of valor and coming out with slaying dragons and building castles and the whole nine, you know. But I think this, for me, it has made me one of the strongest people in the world to be able to actually run a business. I wake up every day and do a business, and then still being able to have the capacity and the energy to be able to handle my family and my wife at the same time. Mm-hmm. You're some of the strongest people in the world if you can actually wake up and have that mentality where you're doing stuff where you're your own boss, et cetera, and then being able to like take care of your children, play with them, feed them, encourage them, nurture, educate. Like, I don't know anything better than that right now. So, and then to still have time to create something out of nothing and be this effortless vessel of a think tank to be able to pour it up, put that somewhere. Everyone doesn't have that capability. So, I think it's important. I think this dad role is valuable. I think it's what even society needs, the balance of not this whole masculine being that we're so masculine that we can't do anything. Mm-hmm. So the balance of being a dad is a privilege to be able to do both roles, as far as go out there, hustle, as Matt says, and then after that, take off this whole armor and everything else and be gentle and be a gentle giant in your household.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Theo. Matt, any thoughts?
Just the opportunity that you're asking these questions, I'm like getting a little emotional thinking about this, actually, which I'm emotional about everything. So that's part of it. But like, I just feel I remember early on when the kids were young, feeling like the most lonely I've ever felt in my life. Just, I'm always hanging out with my friends' partners or this. And I've turned out now they're my friends, I would say, separately, you know, like that kind of thing. But it's one of those things where it's like, I don't want to be the only, you know, the only one doing everything, which is funny because it's shown me so many things about how so many people in our society have to live like that all the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like racially, yeah, whatever you think. And I feel very like I needed to make my own way out of the loneliness in a way. Does that make sense? I mean, your kids give you some of that, but it's not the same thing. As my wife is very, very open to our extroversion needs of each other. So we take turns. She's an amazing supportive person for me. Knows when I need to leave the house for a while, you know, that kind of thing. She really wants the best for me, just like I want the best for her. There's always been for me a very huge ongoing tension about gender roles, not believing in them. I don't, but it doesn't mean they're not consistently speaking into my ear and making me like, you're not making enough money because you've got to, I don't know, you got to buy this woman whatever she wants because that's what you're supposed to do. Or this is capitalism is added to a T, and that is in turn some of the negatives that all those do is like, I have very much had a hard time in the last few years of presence because of I have now a space that's not in my house that I share with some people to work when I need to not be at home. Because when I'm at home, I always have work I could be doing, and I always have kids that I should be living with, you know what I mean, experiencing life with. And it's, I'm never all the way into either one the way I really want to be. And that's the hardest part in my life right now. I do feel like I've learned some ways personally that I can kind of overcome some of that, at least for momentum. I loved what Alex said earlier about seasons, because it really speaks to me in a way that I need to be more aware of, and not just consistently being like, I have 5 minutes. I can't do anything in 5 minutes. Like, I can't do anything in 2 hours, to be honest, the way I work. So it's a very slow process, but I do feel like just you asking us to be on this podcast is a very, like, weirdly backwards, you're seeing us when we should be seeing you, you know, like that kind of thing. I'm just really thankful that you're asking, and it's just nice even to connect with people, even if it's virtually like this, and feel that and feel supported in that way.
Well, I think too, like, kind of coming back to the end of what Alex was saying about, like, community for parents, there is, you know, because of the history of invisible labor and marginalization and folks who, you know, like women who were kept out of the workplace and kind of kept at home, you know, there is a lot of noise and a lot of support, not as much as there should be, but now there's a lot of voices who are trying to create space. Like, I'm a perfect example of that, like the Artist Mother podcast. You know, this is very specifically, at least in its origin, was I wasn't interested in doing an artist parent podcast. Like, I wanted the narrative to be focused around artists who identify as mothers. And it's just like, in some ways, I almost feel like you guys have it harder, because we're in this moment of a lot of platforms, a lot of narratives, like, shedding light on the maternal experience. And I think part of the, like, for me, I'm always like, why do dudes who in the art world never talk about being dads? Like, is it something about, like, the way that their life is structured? Is it because they have a wife at home who allows them to just be in the studio all day and go do this and this? And or is it because there's a vulnerability aspect, there's a lack of community, there's a lack of empathy, you know, like, just, it's just interesting to kind of think about why that support might not be there, like, right now, and what are ways that we can open that narrative and make it more inclusive?
Well, I feel like that goes, like, two ways, because it's like, I think fathers do talk about these things, and I've had some of these discussions with, like, my friends that are fathers, but the larger culture doesn't encourage that sort of conversation to happen. Therefore, if somebody were to make an artist dad's group, it wouldn't get any traction, you know, whereas, like, an artist mother podcast, you know, because sexism and patriarchy, you know, the larger culture says, like, oh, this is a way that we understand women. And this is, like, women, you know, in the traditional role, and speaking about traditional roles that we can understand. And therefore we can amplify this because we understand it, you know? You know, it's the same with, like, artists of color, right? It's like, oh, like, this artist is, Asian or Black or Latino, and they're making work that, like, has, like, loud announcements that their work is about their identity. So as the white art world, we can understand that, what we can understand, and it's legible to us in a way that we can make sense of. So therefore we'll amplify it. You know, God forbid you make work that's kind of nuanced and, you know, not about your identity fixing more. So I think it's, like, kind of both ways. But I do think there's, like, also, like, probably just numerically, there's probably less stay-at-home dads, you know, maybe there's a little bit more in the art world just because of what we do, but I think maybe that's also a thing. I love what you said, Matt, about I felt the same way. It's like, you know, I thought I was like this feminist, this progressive feminist, and then I'd be like, I need to make money, you know, and then I'd be like, fuck, where did that come from? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I was like, I thought I was this like progressive, like, you know, very like forward thinking guy, but then I would get these thoughts, you know, and then you're like, oh my God, like, it's like totally internalized, you know, like we've learned all these messages, no matter, you know, how progressive we think we are. So that's cool to hear you talk about that too. So like, I'm not the only guy.
Just to piggyback off of that, I think with that, like, it's not popular, and I'm great. For like, you know, I get a chance to talk to Matt, and sometimes I don't want to be a burden to him, but it's like, okay, I get it. You have kids, you're an artist, you're a full-time artist, so you have to have something that's like-minded. And we found ourselves, you know, I find myself refreshed after talking to him, because it's unpopular. It's like we don't get to share. It's deemed as weakness to even say that, you know, I'm frustrated with this, or we don't even talk about the topics, even, you know, to our counterpartners, that, you know, postpartum is real. We don't get the chance to talk about those topics of like, you know what, I don't have the balance or the cap. I'm mentally, I am creating nonstop, but then when am I present with my family, it's the other extreme. Mm. And what does it look like to turn it off and to be there visually and emotionally and all these capacities to be with your family versus thinking like, okay, I have to go make money. This is my bread and butter. This is how I contribute to my family. Those are those topics and talks that we don't get a chance to share with everyone because it's either deemed as weakness or deemed as unpopular, or some people just don't know or have the capacity to even think of that light. Mm-hmm. So when you have community like this to be able to share platforms and situations and light on this subject, I deemed it as important, and it's I'm happy that that this exists here. So
anything else? Yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Sorry. No. It just seems like the things that we're talking about don't seem to be valuable to popular culture. Just those qualities and skills that we have realized over the course of having kids, and maybe we are different, but I think most dads feel this way. That you don't see what has been a terrible stereotype, but what women give to children as emotional support and mm-hmm. time and focus and creative stuff, actually, and just like love, physical love, whatever. It's looked at as like, well, you're just like, oh, okay, well, that's mm-hmm. not enough, you know, like that's not good enough for the rest of us. So I've had so many dads come up to be like, I could never do what you do. Like, and they're supposed to be like saying a compliment to me. And I'm just like, yes, you can. Like, you should be. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's, I'm sure, whatever. It's really nice to talk to you guys.
Yeah. You know what makes me really upset? And we can edit this out if you want later. But the thing that makes me the most mad is when, like, you know, like somebody, like, let's say I went to high school with, or somebody posts like on Instagram, it's like, oh, my husband cooked dinner, and they make this whole like huge thing about it, or like they took the kids for 3 hours. And it's like this huge accomplishment. And like, man, like I've been in the war zone for like 3 years straight, you know, like, it's like, you know, like, where's my medal?
Yeah.
Like sometimes I feel like, I mean, that kind of upsets me sometimes. Cause it's like men get away with doing like literally the bare minimum. And then they're just like, oh my God, how did you, like, I can't believe you know how to change a diaper. That's like, you know,
I will say that women are guilty of furthering that narrative.
Right,
like,
right.
Like, you know, it's in some ways it's easier to kind of create that trope of like, wow, like he did this special thing. Like, look at my great, you know, spouse, versus just normalizing the behavior. He made dinner. Guess what? I made dinner 5 times. He made it 1 time this week. Let's just normalize it, you know, like it, yeah. Like, I think more women need to be careful of like glorifying what should be normalized, you know, sort of behavior within like the gender structures and roles of a household. And I know this all too well in the generations between my family. My grandmothers think that my husband is like, can't do no wrong. Like they don't know where I found him. They just, you know, and then, you know, my mom and his mom, you know, to like have a better understanding of how, yeah, we're in a partnership and like we both have equal like roles and responsibilities, but they still definitely lean a lot more towards, wow, John is like such a great dad. And, you know, like just the things that like my family say about John, no one would ever say about me because it's just normal expectation. They're not like, wow, like what a great mom you are. Or what, like your family's so lucky that you like cook so well. And, you know, it's just funny. And my family is wonderful and very supportive, but even just those subtle narratives of like calling out behavior that could just be like equalized, normal, you know, like honoring the partnership, it becomes this like off the chart, like glory, you know, thing that just drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Either of you want to talk about just maybe some of the ways that you do, you know, divide or, you know, kind of share roles within your household, how you structure your time so that you both feel supported. I know too that like having a work from home life can be very complex and it can be hard to separate and to, you know, to feel like, okay, I work from home, like I have my work and my home life all at my fingertips, but then in a way that it makes it harder to get away sometimes and to like, you feel less validated for just like doing things for pleasure that are like outside of the home. I don't know. Do any of you want to just talk about like some of the ways that you try to find balance between just the labor of running a household and having multiple careers and children, and then how you find time to like be yourself outside of those things?
Okay. I know for myself, I would probably say with these past 3 or 4 months, just my wife came to me and said, "Hey, honey, we appreciate what you're doing and how hard you go and everything like that. And you're painting, you know, painting the world up and everything like that. But when are we going to have our time more often?" And that hit me, that hurt me. Cause of course, everything I do, I definitely mean well to do right by the family and everything like that, and make sure that everyone else is taken care of in some kind of capacity. And so I recently restructured my schedule where every day I will stop. The latest I will paint, it's hard, but at 10 o'clock for us. Like there's no paint. I can't pick up a paintbrush. I'm not doing anything. I'm not on my iPad. No, nothing. I don't do any painting on the weekends. Help me. unless it's like a project where it's like, hey, there's some good income with this, and please by means do it. Let's talk about it ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Learning the transition of being present. Cause like with my wife, she works from home, but then also too can be in office as well too. So what does it look like for us? Plus she goes to school. She's a full-time student as well too. Wow. So 2 nights out the week, I'm here, make sure that we're all getting fed, make sure that she has her food before she goes to school, the whole nine. Mm. I think that the biggest portion is for us communication. And then from there, long as everyone else's schedule is running smooth, I will find witty ways where I can actually be able to I could like knock out a couple hours here, draw here, do this here. Drop off paintings at the, you know, FedEx here, whatever it takes. So, and it's almost like it would be no different from when I was working full time on the corporate scale and finding witty ways to figure out my art there. And I feel like this, if I could do it with their time, I could do it with my time as well too here. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm running this beast of a business, trying to find witty ways and strategic ways and consistent ways to make sure that I'm present, but then also taking care of business as well too, and creating.
That balance can be hard to find. I know full well. Matt, you want to talk about that? Just kind of how you're sharing stuff in your family or any of that?
Yes. Like I said earlier, we are in the beginnings of summer. Also doing murals kind of as of past few summers has kind of been like, that's a very seasonal work, especially in Indiana, maybe not in LA. Need to move over there maybe. But the amount of time and work I transitioned to in that time period is very different. And I also really value, Amanda works so hard. Public school teachers have had a very rough go lately. And I don't see it getting much easier soon. And maybe this is something I need to also deal with a little bit, is that I've always wanted her not to work in the summer. Like, I want her to be like, maybe that's a masculine thing that I'm doing. I don't tell her not to work. She also does not want to work. She does not want to work. And so I've always tried to do a little bit more than I can in that way. So the summer is so totally different than school year time. I feel like the problem that I've noticed for us is that I want everything. Just like in my art career, I just want to do everything. Mm-hmm. You just can't. Like, there's got to be something that's going to cut back. And I have noticed we don't have family that are in the area that could babysit. And we have noticed that has been something we've really forgone, is we will just, one of us will go do stuff with friends, which we do have a lot of friends, or we trade babysitting and, you know, that kind of stuff with friends, because we don't make enough to do that. And then also it's Fort Wayne, so luckily we can live on this mediocre artist and great teacher salary. So it's like one of those things, like, okay, so that's one thing that has been hard. I do feel like we have really been, if she has stuff to do, I feel like, I don't even feel weird about this at this point. It's just how our life is. If she has to work late, she works late. I'm just always default to the person who makes the money, which I don't think is actually at this point a problem. And not always, I'd say. If there's something I really, really want to do, she knows. But like, if she has, you know, parent-teacher conferences and stuff for 2 days, I know she's not going to be home till 9. What am I going to do about that? But there's times where she can't understand what I need for work, because I don't, you know, it's so fluid and it's so much of a flow oriented thing that I don't even know what I need until it happens. And then usually I need to take the kids if we need to do it. Cause it's just like, and I've gotten to the point where maybe that I've gotten to the point too far where I just default, don't ask for help. And that's been a huge thing for me that I've learned negatively as a dad, is not asking for help anymore. I'm just going to do it myself. And I can't imagine women having it like that so much more, because I feel like you have an expectation to not ask for help. Mm-hmm. We just don't do it as men. We just don't ask for help ever for anyone, not even our own like moms and dads most of the time. So it's like, I'm not saying it's negative. I would never change any of this stuff, but I am bringing up a lot of the worst parts of everything. Sorry.
No.
Everybody listening to this podcast knows all of this stuff. It's not like new to
No,
you.
It's not. And, you know, everybody who I interview, there's parts of the narrative that are always the same. And that's like, I think part of that is those are the hardest parts of our culture to break down, right? Is all of us always responding to capitalism, to art worlds, patriarchal stereotypes? Like, it's just a slow chip. Like, we're just chipping away at it. And I think actually it's really wonderful to hear how similar all of you feel in that, like, knowing that it's not a gender thing necessarily that we're fighting against. Like it's these larger things that are kind of keeping us trapped in our identities, that are siloing us. And, you know, hopefully this is a space where some of those walls are broken down and we can really see that, like, we have a lot more in common than we think, you know. Anything you want to share, Alex?
I mean, I guess, like, yeah, I mean, my wife is very supportive. So she, like, and she's like, she's really good about, like, work-life balance. So she's been very aggressive in finding jobs that will allow her to work, like, not the full week. So she, like, she works 4 days a week full-time, and then Fridays she has with the kids, and then that's my day in the studio. And she's very good about, like, making sure I, you know, have time to exercise and stuff like that, and she doesn't, you know, ever, like, complain about, like, you know, me going to train martial arts and do that, because she knows that. I mean, she's a psychiatrist, so she probably, like, understand this on a much higher level than I do. So she's really supportive in that way.
I'm so proud to share that this episode is sponsored by Kindred Bravely. Kindred Bravely is a premium maternity and nursing brand that makes it easy for mothers to find functional, stylish, and comfortable clothing. Since launching in 2015, Kindred Bravely has grown into a sisterhood of moms who help each other transition from the bump to the breast and beyond. They use premium, super soft fabrics, including bamboo and organic cotton. They carry nursing-friendly dresses, tanks, and tees that are comfortable and stylish, and bump-friendly tops and bottoms, and a sleepwear line that is my personal favorite. Kindred Bravely is here for moms no matter where they are on their motherhood journey. Their mission is a comfortable bra in every nursing mother's wardrobe. So visit kindredbravely.com and use discount code AM20 to save 20% off your purchase. That's kindredbravely.com and use discount code AM20 to save 20% off. Thank you so much, Kindred Bravely, for existing in the world, for supporting mamas, and for supporting this podcast. Okay, a couple more questions before we wrap up. Just want to know, like, this is a little bit of a dreaming space, like a brainstorming space, but just want to know, like, what do you want or need more of in your life as an artist parent? Either something about your art career that you just really would like to have clarity on, or you need more support in, or, you know, specifically, it could be a parent thing or something that's kind of crossing over. Like, what, you know, what would be, like, a game changer for you, or something that you either wish that you had as a resource, or that you could kind of see come into fruition in your life that you feel like would make things a little more pleasant or easier, or, you know, kind of better in your eyes? Anybody have an idea? Theo?
It's a lot. It's a list.
Let's hear it.
Man, it's too long to even be on a podcast, but I think for myself, just quality time to create quality work. Because I feel like I'm always, like, just getting ideas out of my head. I paint fast. I paint really fast. And I like to get it out of my head, but I want to be able to create quality work. I want to be able to create it in a quality space. My space here at home is great, though. I have the garage, but it's still not big enough to where I can see myself going, because I have other mediums that I want to try and get my hands on as well, too. I want to make sure that creatively that I am a voice, not only just here in the Midwest, but other places, slowly but surely. I'm doing such, but I don't want to be oversaturated just in the Midwest region. But this, what can I do elsewhere? I want to be able to make sure that I still learn a consistent balance of turning off my brain sometimes to be with my family presently, fully, that they have my undivided attention, then I could be an asset to whatever their need is. And then also, too, I need that from them as well, too. But I just want to create dope shit with dope people.
I love it.
That's all I want to do. And I want to be able to do it to a tune where I'm like a fine tune, like piano, where I know the exact note, the exact, I have so much between my iPad, my brain, and my garage right now that I could level a whole city with art.
You're getting close.
And I just be able to tastefully, respectfully find an avenue to be able to funnel everything that I could do, from everything from creating to marketing, putting it out to the world to see, to those actually buying or being exposed to impressions, to be able to shape a culture that's in my brain that I know can come out and do some both damage and uplifting. It's like a sword and a hammer at the same time, the way I create. I have a witty way of cutting things down, but also building up at the same time. And I feel like my art and my presence can do that. I just need the space and the time to do that, because I have so much. And I know for a fact I won't be able to do it all in my lifetime. I've come to grips with the reality, but I just know that what I'm doing, I need people to think like me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's hard because it's hard to let everything out, because not saying that you don't trust people, but will you be able to articulate it and see the vision fully? So it's like, I'm a hoarder when it comes to that as well too. So I even hoard visions that, hell, it may not even be for me, but just how to unpack that and what does it look like for me? Like I said, I can go on and on about that, but that's just me in a nutshell. Long as I am present with my family, creating dope shit and living, that's all I want.
Thanks. Theo, Alex, what do you need more of in your life as an artist, as a parent?
I guess, okay, so maybe this is a cop-out, but like, I feel like it all, if we're dreaming here.
We're right, dreaming. Like this is a dreaming
we need
space.
We need to dismantle like white supremacist, capitalist, patriarchal culture, because I think everything that I want stems from that. So as an artist, like, we need to dismantle like the sort of white supremacist and capitalist patriarchal, you know, curriculum that we've been fed, and sort of the models of success that we are sort of all, at least that I've internalized as being the one path to success, right? And then as a parent, I mean, it's like, you know, I have two Asian looking girls, and I can't shield them from racism. I can't shield them from becoming some white dude's like weird fetish, you know, and that like kind of breaks my heart, you know. And like, you know, our kids, they have active shooter drills, right? Like that's just normal. And we're just going to accept that as a country, right? And that's also linked to that, to white supremacy and capitalism, you know, right? Because mm-hmm. they'd rather make a profit than like protect our kids or pay our teachers. You know, we had to open the restaurants and bars before we like made sure the kids could go to school. They're trying to like have kindergartners do Zoom school because they wanted to, but people wanted to go out and drink and make a profit instead. So I think like large scale, that's like what needs to happen. I mean, on the smaller scale, you know, I think for me, like life as an artist is kind of about that intellectual and emotional nourishment that comes from like, you know, like making your work, having your work shown, seeing other people's work, having other people think about your work, thinking about other people's work and kind of talking to them about it. So like for me, not only do I want to like continue to make my own work, but also like define the context within like which like define the context that I'll be shared in. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I hope that my art like kind of resonates with and connects me with people that will provide that intellectual and emotional nourishment. So it's like just knowing we have the agency to create the context and community that we want within the art world. So that's kind of what I need more of. It's like, I'm always thinking about like, how can I set up these different structures that will set the conditions to meet the right people so I can make dope shit with dope people, right? I gotta meet those dope people. So you gotta set the conditions to meet them. Mm. So that's kind of, I don't know, as I
enter my midlife crisis. That's kind of what I've been thinking about recently.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Matt. Anything you want to share about what more you want to see in the art world or in your own life?
I mean, we're going to have the most healthy midlife crises, aren't we? Just make more art and make friends. That's going to be my midlife. I do feel like for me, I think I kind of said it earlier, I want more time, and that's not even possible. If we're dreaming, let's mm-hmm. just say time machine. But that's with my kids. And also they still like me at 12. They still really like me, which is a great feeling. My sixth grade son will hug me in front of sixth graders. It's crazy. And I love it so bad. 'cause that's how I was, but, wasn't allowed to be. What I also want, is focus and organization, which I actually, all the things I said negatively that I need to do better at, whatever, that's how I talk all the time. It all comes down to, honestly, for me, relationships. I really feel like I've gotten some really good creative relationships that I didn't know would ever exist in my life a few years ago. Whether it's deep, whether it's once a 6 months meeting, it's just making things around people who understand me and who I want to understand, and I want to get as much flow as they want to get from me. That's really what I want right now. I don't know what else to say about that.
Okay. One last question. Just want to bring it back to your art. And just have you talk, you kind of all have touched on this a little bit, but just want you to talk in closing about what you hope your art does in the world. And in what context you would like it to exist. Alex, you kind of talked about, like, you know, wanting there to be this very specific context where your art and your art brain sort of feels nourished. I don't know if you want to go a little bit deeper on that, but, and also, like, what do you want people to know about you or to experience when they get to view your art? You can start, Alex.
I mean, like, I'm always going to make art, but it's like Matt said, it's like, for me right now, that it's like the relationships are really the important thing. So what I want my art to do is to, like, connect me with the people that I want to connect with. And like, it's like, I don't care. Okay. So this is aspirational me talking. I don't care if I don't get, you know, if I'm not showing at, like, the big, like, arena rock equivalents of the art institutions. Right. And this is, you know, I'm trying to tell myself this, and I'm still, like, trying to kill
I
that
don't
part of
care.
Myself that wants to do that, you know, and I'll, like, you know, but it's like, it's like, I want my art to be shown in a context where it will be, where it will be appreciated, and it will, like, form relationships with other, like, interesting artists, and it will, like, kind of collectively sort of create this sense of belonging for people that maybe don't, you know, don't fit, you know, what's on the menu right now. I keep using that metaphor, which is annoying, but yeah, I guess that's kind of what I want. I was thinking art is, like, a long game too. You know, it's like, I think we're all old enough to have seen, like, many people's art careers, you know, have, like, 3 or 5 year, like, things. So it's like, you know, that's like, as long as I'm, like, intellectually and emotionally nourished to keep making work, like, that's, like, if I can be old and have, like, a couple friends that still care about what I'm making, and, like, I care about what they're making, like, that's pretty good, you know? And, like, and then my kids can be like, oh man, like, remember how dad was around all the time? Like, what was up with that? You're like, that's a win for me.
I love that. Matt, what do you hope your art does in the world? How do you want it to be experienced by others?
I want a lot of what Alex wants, actually. It's very much, man, that's a hard question for me, because I don't think that far ahead very often. Mm-hmm. I feel like I want to make what I'm supposed to make if I can. And I do want people to understand me in some way, but I also, it's a full-on mutual, like, I want them to get meaning out of themselves from what I make.
I was going to say, think about your solo show that you had in January, like that, the whole, you know, container for that show was like allowing people to see themselves and make that connection with you too.
Yeah. Like everything is a self-portrait that you make in a way, right? I think that's probably been said a million times, but it's kind of true. And it's a self-portrait that you're looking at as well, so of yourself. And I just feel very connected through art in a way that I didn't feel in any other way of my life. Granted, I've had opportunities probably that I didn't deserve and stuff like that. And so it doesn't come down to, basically it comes down to what I really want for everyone is to see each other and be together. And I don't know, that's very cheesy, but that's me. I'm a corn dog.
Yes, you are. It's okay. Theo, what do you hope your art does in the world? How do you want it to be experienced by others?
I hope my art will get into spaces and connect with people who are subject to just one menu, as Alex articulates. In this society, Black artists sometimes, most times, history has shown, don't get the voice as loud as it should be, unless we're dead or unless something happens to us, or you have to have this sad story, because trauma sells. I want to be able to do both roles as far as present trauma in a manner where it's creating conversation, where people are able to digest, but then also to look at themselves in the piece, in anything that I create with my impressions. I want to be able to make sure that it's sound. I'm a visual DJ, so I like to mix a lot of elements. So I want to be continue to be sound and culture, politics, class, creeds, all the whole nine, to be able to, whatever I do from these Black pair of eyes, as far as perspective, that you'll be able to, like I said, to articulate, you understand it. Even if you've never met me in life, you will see my work and you will get me. Which that's what I have been doing, but I just want to continue that where I'm in spaces where people don't feel like Black people should be there. I want to be in those places where you just say like, okay, your kind is not welcome here. I want to disrupt those places to change the climate of places. And that's what I've been doing as far as visually, but then also as a person. Because some people, they may never think of Black people being in spaces or being so polished or up to par, or, you know, these paradiddles of words and phrases of who we are. I want to continue to shape the narrative that we're more than just our skin tone. So.
Beautiful. Yeah. Okay, 5 questions to close. We'll do kind of a quick round. Who's your biggest art crush, Alex? Art crush.
Right now, my biggest art crush is Arlen Huang. And he, just because he has shown me how to live a life of integrity as an artist and how to stand up for your morals, even in the face of like shooting yourself in the foot for your own career. So y'all can look up what happened with the Godzilla show at Museum of Chinese in America if you want to know more about that.
Matt, who's your biggest art crush?
Oh, you guys. No, I mean, it is true, actually. But also, I really like Stephen Powers from Philadelphia. He's like a sign painter, and I really like what he's about, actually. And I like Jordan Castile a ton. Like, those are the main ones right now.
Theo, biggest art crush?
Living artist, Heber Brantley. He's like our next door neighbor in Chicago, and he's been rocking it out. He's out in LA now, I hear. But just seeing him in his work and being the voice to like just the Black people, like his main character Flyboy was based off of the Tuskegee Airmen. and just seeing what you can do with your art. And he has shown an example of what that was and had the chance to privilege to meet him this past year, well, this year. So fanboy here.
All right, back to you, Alex. Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Favorite place to travel is Taipei because the food is there. It is just amazing. I'd love to go to the Galapagos Islands someday.
Good one. Matt, favorite place to travel, dream trip? Don't say Kansas.
My favorite place to travel is probably Colorado just because all my family's out there. And I do love driving through Kansas because I don't live there. Because I don't live there, it's fun. And I also want to go to Angkor Wat someday in Cambodia. That would be amazing.
Theo, favorite place to travel, dream trip?
Favorite place to travel is Jamaica. I just came back from my consistent spot is Vegas.
Love it. Okay, back to you, Alex. Just a favorite or a very inspirational film or book that's been an influence on your life?
You know, next time you're in Vegas, just keep driving a little further, then you can hit me up. We can meet up. Favorite books recently, Mediocre by Ijeoma Oluo, and that really helped connect kind of the long legacy of how this country protects and uplifts white male mediocrity for me. And then another book is Glitch Feminism by Legacy Russell. And that's this like really empowering manifesto that's kind of honest about the shortcomings of our society, but still feels hopeful. And it kind of provided me with a great model for moving forward in this world. And it like challenged me and inspired me to create the community that I want to see in the world.
Matt, favorite or just an inspirational book or film, something that's been an inspiration to you?
Lately, I watched that Station 11 season on HBO, and I was like blown away by how inspired I was by that show. Yeah, and I'm basic with the books. Like, I just found Artist's Way like a year ago, so we won't talk about that.
That's a good one. Theo, what about you? Film or book that's been a big inspiration to you?
Movie, John Wick. Book, The Go-Giver. It's this book based off of just, it's one of my favorite books right now. It's like a 2-hour audio read, but it's just like this insane ride of this wealthy, stupid, dumb, rich dude who makes relationships with people and show this person the new ropes on how to build relationships, but how everyone was actually be prosperous after it.
Interesting.
I recommend it.
Okay, favorite meal, Alex?
I think I could eat some version of a noodle soup every day for the rest of my life. It'd be pretty good.
Matt?
Instant ramen. I mean, that's literally every day. I'm having it for lunch. I'm having someone over to have instant ramen in the studio today.
Theo, you're like, guys.
Hey, so it's the toss up between steam buns with duck right in the pocket always, but my go to is just a good steak, risotto, cream spinach, right in the pocket. That's my thing.
Okay, and finally, just want to offer you all a space to give a shout out to somebody who supports you in your work, Alex.
I mean, shout out to my wife, of course, for making money and providing space for me to make work. And shout out to you, Kaylin, for, you know, creating the space and allowing us to invade this mother group.
Welcome. A welcome invasion. Matt?
My wife, for sure. My family, my kids as well. They are very supportive in a lot of ways. And honestly, the whole city. I very much including you too, Kaylin and Theo, because I've been really close with you the last few years. But the city has really supported people who make things here. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited about that for somewhere in a pocket in the Midwest. And it's different.
A city no one's ever heard of, but yet, right. Hey, we got some art culture happening here. It's great to be a part of.
I Theo, gotta visit. Sounds awesome.
You're coming, Alex.
I would say for me, man, my wife and my children, I thank my wife for just, man, for understanding me and not understanding and still trusting me to be able to create. That's huge. Mm. So then, you know, you guys, to have like-minded people sharpening iron with each other has been always a blessing. And then, man, have to pick it back off of Matt, the city, man, like for the fact that we're able to create a space here and be incubators for dope art around the city. Like, the city trusts us. That's major. So, yeah. Shouts out to Fort Wayne, Indiana.
It's more than corn. And let's hope all of the progress that's happening is not at the hands of too much capitalism. We'll see.
Yeah, really.
We'll see how we got some lots of new stuff on the horizon in Fort Wayne, and I think all of us are a little skeptical, Alex. So, but we'll stay strong with our irons, and we'll keep our voices loud, right?
Yep.
Okay. Finally, promise to close. Tell people where they can find and follow you guys. What's your Instagram and website or any other social media platform you want to share, Alex?
My website is alexpeck.com, P-A-I-K. My Instagram is alexpeck, and then you can follow tigerstrikesasteroid.com, and we have separate handles for each of the sites.
Perfect. Matt?
My Instagram is datmattmatt, D-A-T, Matt, like 50% of all white Midwestern boys at my age named Matt. MattPlatt.com is my website too.
Theo?
FreshLaundry.com. Fresh Laundry is spelled with P-H, or just hit me on Instagram under That Laundry. So it's cool to hang art. Actually, no. Art is just okay. You got to hang laundry.
Okay. Again, thank you all so much. This was such a great conversation, and I just really appreciate your vulnerability and your willingness to talk about this stuff. It means a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for giving us the space.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.